Did you know that Gazette print subscribers have full access to digital content at no extra cost? Activate your digital subscription now to enjoy the latest headlines, sports updates, and more at thegazette.com or through the Gazette mobile app. Read the page-by-page daily newspaper with the Green Gazette, perfect for on-the-go reading. Activate your subscription at thegazette.com/activate or call 319-398-8333.
How are you doing, everyone? Jeff Johnson here from the Gazette with my cohorts, Jeff Linder and KJ Pilcher. On a beautiful Wednesday afternoon, we are taping this. Another edition of the Portal Prep Podcast. Gentlemen, we're 2 weeks in the book, so let's do the math there. What's the percentage? Two nights of the way through the season, right? So, I guess let's just talk about week two a little bit. Let's start out with maybe the games that we covered. Lindy, you were
I was
passing off our Gazette 2025 Male Athlete of the Year award.
Yeah, and that was the main
tell
reason.
Us a little bit about West Liberty, and you got to meet Riker Dengler and his family. He's an amazing all-around athlete.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about him more than I'll talk about the game, because that was kind of the more interesting thing. Certainly a great athlete, certainly worthy of our award last year. The state champion in the 400 hurdles, and then just kind of what set him apart to me and probably for others either was just what he did during the winter, as a basketball player and as a wrestler, state place winner in wrestling. I think he averaged 17, 18 points a game in basketball. And you just don't see that very often at all. And you know, the joke when always was kind of watching the wrestlers play basketball during the practice. And I don't know if it was that way for you guys too, but
I can attest to all that.
Yeah. And, I certainly would not have been a successful wrestler either, but,
Even though I'm going to say this, myself and Reggie Urell used to give Stacy Freeze and Tammy Sloan, two of Washington girls basketball players back in the day, a run for their money in open gyms a couple times. So I'm sticking to that. But other than that, wrestlers playing basketball is usually about as ugly as lipstick on a pig.
Yeah, but anyway, great career for Riker Dengler, and we're hoping that we can hand the girls winners off here in the next few weeks, whether it's Libby Fandel, Chloe Meester. I know Chloe's got a really busy fall with the Louisville volleyball team, and it won't be too long till Libby's playing basketball at Kansas. That kind of creeps up in a hurry in the fall anymore, but As far as the game is concerned, West Liberty won my game 30-7. Really kind of controlled the game, from start to finish. Literally from start to finish, they had a kickoff return for a touchdown and to start the game and led the whole way. So that's enough said about my game.
All right, Pilchy, talk to us about where you were at Friday.
Yeah, so I was in the happening town of Mount Vernon for Benton Community and Mount Vernon. That game for us in our poll, it was a top 10 battle in Class 3A. And this was something, Mount Vernon, you talk about starts, right, where you can't lose a game, but you certainly can put yourself in position to win a game early. It's kind of like the opposite of golf, right? You always talk about you can't win it on the opening round, but you can certainly lose it by then. Switch that for football, in my opinion. And Mount Vernon came out, set the tone really early, had a long drive to start. To start things off, Kellen Haverbeck hit Mikey Ryan for a touchdown pass to go up 7-0. Benton Community second play, Carson Nolan threw a pass that Tommy Romberg picked off. And then the very next play, Kellen Haverbeck went, you know, just kind of a QB draw, got to the second level, got some good blocks, and was off for a 28-yard touchdown run. So in that that turnaround, they went up 14-0 in about a minute. So that really kind of gave Mount Vernon control, and they never really let go. Haverbeck hit Tommy Romberg for a touchdown pass right before halftime. I think it was 23-0 at the half. Mount Vernon ended up winning 30-20. Haverbeck had a heck of a night. Let's see, he threw for 103 yards and then rushed for 58. And Benton's defense is really tough, so those numbers sound maybe a little modest or on the low side, but against Benton's defense, it was a quality performance. Two touchdown passes and then rushed for one. Jacob Yock had the other touchdown run for the Mustangs in the second half. And here's a heck of a defensive effort, because really until the end, Benton connected on a couple long touchdown passes to get closer, but really it wasn't as close as 10 points would sound. Mount Vernon's defense played really well. Jackson Anderson, 12 tackles, 11 solo, 1.5 sacks, and 2.5 tackles for loss. So Mount Vernon looked really, really good on both sides. Obviously, Haverbeck, we know he's going to Drake, and he's an outstanding player that really leads that offense. I was also impressed with Carson Nolan in the losing effort. He threw 257 yards and rushed for 83. Hit Eli Patterson, I think, 6 times for 115 yards, including a 48-yard touchdown pass. So good effort there. But the win kind of took its toll on Mount Vernon a little bit. They had, I think, Kaysen Curran left with a little bit of an injury at one time. But the big one was Jace Jaspers in the first series. He had a little 9-yard run and got hit on the sideline, and then it had to be helped off the field. Coach Meester, Brad Meester, didn't have an update after the game. Haven't really heard his prognosis, but honestly, talking to people around the field, it did not sound real encouraging that he'd be back for the Solon game this week. So kind of a tough blow there for Mount Vernon, but, man, they proved that they have some depth and some other playmakers, because, you know, they were still able to hold on and do well against a very good Benton team.
We'll keep rolling here while we're waiting for JJ to come back. You know, a couple games out in the area, and we'll talk about JJ's game when he returns. But I think a couple real big eye openers, one out in Central Iowa with Liberty jumping all over four-time defending state champion Southeast Polk. It was 38-0 after three quarters. They coast home 38-20. Have you had a chance to look at that much as far as, you know, just what the significance of that is?
Yeah, you know, the way that Liberty won, and you nailed it right on the head, Linder. I mean, to think that they had a running clock against the four-time defending state champs. And we've talked about this. We've mentioned it. We talked a little bit about it in our Four Downs feature this week that you can find at thegazette.com or in our Wednesday print edition. It's always a question of whether or not Eastern Iowa's closed the gap with Central Iowa in the biggest class, in 5A. Liberty is one of those teams that I think people look at as being that could be a team that could be the team to finally make that jump. I mean, it's been since 2009, since Eastern Iowa has had a state champ in that biggest class with Iowa City High that year. But, you know, Reese Rettig threw for 5 touchdowns in that game to 5 different receivers too. I mean, that's one thing that kind of sticks out to me is, you know, it's not just one mismatch or whatever. That tells me he's got a lot of targets. Their scheme is going to cause fits for a lot of defenses because you have a lot of people running routes that can make plays.
And he's doing it with new targets. He lost 2 or 3 of his biggest targets since last year. And boy, oh boy, you know, I think you hit it on the head. JJ, we're talking a little bit about Liberty's win at Southeast Polk.
Yeah, and sorry. My computer keeps talking out. I
mentioned that last year it was the defense that was kind of susceptible until they got some people in place towards the end of the year. Now you have that offense. Obviously, the graduation of those receivers like Dallas Miller and a couple others, that's not hampering their offense, but their defense has played fantastic here early on. And Southeast Polk scoreless for 3 quarters. And I'm assuming there are probably some reserves in that fourth quarter.
The whole fourth quarter. I actually talked to Scott at the at volleyball tournament Saturday, and he said that they had their second thirds in the whole fourth quarter. Southeast Polk left its ones in for most of the fourth quarter, and that's what happens. So it's the inverse of running up the score.
Yeah, and, you know, their Achilles heel last year was defense. You're looking at their defense being so much more improved, and you still have a really potent offense. Tell you what, I think that was an eye opener about just Liberty talking about vying for a title isn't just lip service. I think they really have the potential for it.
Yeah. One other game I want to talk about really quick, and then JJ can talk about last week is number one, Maquoketa Valley Class A goes down to North Lynn, 16-0. North Lynn didn't have a lot of yards, but they got a couple of first half touchdowns, and they must have played lights out defense against a little bit of a depleted Maquoketa Valley team. KJ, you talked to Jared Collum Saturday morning. You know, what was kind of the gist of that game?
Yeah, the defense, obviously, a big performance there. Now, Brady Wall was out. He didn't play this week, and he's a difference maker. Let's not forget that. Maquoketa Valley was able to move the ball. They got into the red zone, I think, 3 times, and inside the 10 twice. But North Lynn was able to turn them away, turnovers on downs. You know, if Wall's in there, you know, is that the difference? You know, who's to say? But a heck of a performance. Those 2 first half touchdowns, it sounded like North Lynn drove down on the opening possession and took an early lead, 8-0. Will Sommerfeld with a touchdown run. I know he had conversion passes to Rao, and I'm blanking on the second one. They did a nice job. I think a punt pinned Mack Valley inside its own 10 for the second to set up the second score. They had a punt from their own end zone. Will Sommerfeld, because of injuries, because North Lynn has a handful of injuries that they're dealing with too, so they weren't at full strength either. But Will Sommerfeld, Jared Collum doesn't like quarterbacks returning punts just because of the risk of injury, but they really had no choice, and he ended up returning a punt. Punted from its own end zone. He ran up, fielded it, ran it back to about the 15, and then he ran it in for the second touchdown, completed conversion pass, up 16-0 before the half, and then it was all defense after that. So great defensive effort. They did what they needed to do, and just got enough offensively for that win.
JJ, tell us about your game last week.
Yeah, actually, I had 2 of them. I had
the Thursday, Friday games at Kingston Stadium. Sorry about the computer, boys and folks out there. Keeps conking out on me. So
technology's fun.
Yeah, isn't it though? Thursday night, North Scott beat Cedar Rapids, Washington, 38-16, and really kind of a disappointing performance by Washington, which you know, had a pretty uplifting win, as you guys know, in week one over Cedar Rapids Jefferson. And North Scott was playing incredibly shorthanded for a second straight week. 12 guys are out via suspension. They'll be returning this week, according to the coach, Tony Stewart, in his first year. So, you know, Eric Gaddy, talking to him, the head coach at Wash, just said, well, you know how kids are when they hear that guys are out, they just think it might be easy. And that was kind of the case he thought for Washington, which, you know, most teams make that leap from week one to week two, a big improvement. And Washington, I think, kind of regressed, unfortunately, in this game. And what a great story North Scott quarterback Cole Green is, boys, because, okay, so they lose like a ton of great offensive players off of last year's team, which I think was in the semifinals in 4A, at least the quarterfinals, in the playoffs. So one of the candidates to be the starting quarterback this season broke his leg in the summer, so he's gone. Two other quarterback candidates were part of the 12 that were suspended. So enter Cole Green, who didn't even play football at all last season, wasn't planning on going out. Coach Stewart said, well, I need a kicker. Would you at least come out and kick for us? He said, okay, sure. Well, he got the bonus plan. He goes from being the kicker to starting quarterback, QB4, essentially. If you look at the injuries and the suspensions, all he does is throw for 105 yards and two touchdowns and runs for 159 and another touchdown against Washington. So, unbelievable story, right?
Yeah. Right.
All the way around. And that's just guys stepping up. And we all know that North Scott's got an amazing program. And, you know, that's going to be a team that'll probably factor again in 4A when we get to the postseason. So, Not a good loss necessarily for Washington. And then Friday night I had what I think, boys, is another Eastern Iowa candidate in 5A who could break through and possibly finally get Eastern Iowa, you know, that 5A championship for the first time in forever, and that'd be Cedar Rapids Prairie, which was really, really good against – Cedar Rapids Kennedy, I believe it was 38-13 was the final score. This Prairie team has, and that was without Dawson Call, the running back that the transferred in from City High, who's going to be their number one running back. So they were going with the second and third string running backs and still picking up yards. This is a Prairie team that, per usual, is really, really big up front offensively. Has good running back, has two good receivers on the outside that can make plays, especially Che Alexander, has a really good junior quarterback in Kale Kongshog in his first year as a starter for the Hawks. And then you look at defense where they struggled, as you guys know. You both saw Prairie last year. Struggled defensively. This is a very much improved defense. And it starts with the front four. Brian White said, this is as good a front four as you'll see in the state up front.
Really?
White being the Kennedy coach. When he talked about Prairie, you got David Faison, who's probably going to be a Division I college player, eventually kind of leading that group. So a lot of good things going on at Prairie. And you know, like you guys mentioned, the proof will be in the pudding, right, when it comes to in the postseason if Eastern Iowa can, you know, get a team in the finals.
and really there's no reason that somebody can't become that, you know, that torch holder from Eastern Iowa. You know, there's some affluence over here. You've got Cedar Falls, you've got PV and Bettendorf, the three Iowa City schools all have the capability of being there. You know, Kennedy's been close before. Prairie absolutely can. And sooner or later, Linmar's got to get to that level too, you know, yes. As far as, you know, kind of suburban teams that have the resources to get there.
resources, Lindy. That's a big thing, right? And we all know what Prairie's got going on out there with, you know, really improved facilities and another, what, a YMCA or a combined YMCA athletic complex out there, brand new weight room. So Prairie would seemingly have all the things that it needs, and Liberty the same thing, as you talked about as well. So, and I, that, you know, it's good for 5A football.
Yeah,
my opinion. So, other games, I guess. What's you want to talk a little bit about Cedar Rapids Xavier, which you know, kind of brushed past Western Dubuque. Looking for the final score here. Sorry, 21-13. You know, the Saints, I don't know, they haven't really necessarily dominated maybe in the first two games, but certainly have done enough. What do we think about the Saints boys in another big game coming up Friday night for Xavier, right?
Yeah, you know, they won 31-0 at North Scott, even though North Scott was, like you mentioned before, depleted pretty much for disciplinary reasons. Western Dubuque's a good team.
Yeah.
You know, that's a team that was 10-6 to Waller. I think they're – I think our friend Scott Unash in Four Downs said it's probably the best winless team in the state right now. That was a good win. You know, Cash Parks, boy, he's off to a really good start. You know, he did it with his legs this time. He rushed for 115 yards and a touchdown. I believe he threw two touchdown passes, one to Sam Luke and another to Ryan Kelly. So he's really, you know, kind of the straw that stirs the drink, I guess you would say, with that group. And he's proven to be even more of a dual threat, you know, there. You know, Xavier's defense doing really well. Bo Morio leading them in tackles. So, you know, this is a team that I think is off to kind of a workmanlike start, you know, probably doing their job, as Dwayne Schulte would say.
They're getting what they've earned.
Yes.
I think I've heard that one as well. So looking around the Metro, Marion with its first win in the year, and that's got to be a big pick-me-up for the Wolves. You're looking to rebound from a you know, subpar, I guess, 2024. 21-12 winner over Center Point Urbana, so a nice win for the Wolves there. Cedar Rapids Jefferson beats Muscatine, what, 42-14? So Jefferson rebounds very nicely from, you know, the week one, disappointing week one loss to Washington.
Just to mention about Jefferson, you know, their big three, when they're on, they can be really, really good.
Yeah.
And in that game against Muscatine, Vernon Benda threw for 281 yards and five TDs. 117 of those yards and three of those scores were to LJ Nainow. And then Uriza Calilero rushed for 124 yards and one TD. Now, that's not going to happen every game, but when those guys are on, they certainly can make Jefferson very, very dangerous. And they, all three of them came through last Friday for that first win.
Limbaugh lost its game. Help me out, boys. They were in Central Iowa, correct?
Yeah, they lost
to Centennial.
Okay.
35-10.
City High loses to Bettendorf, 21-7. Regina goes to 2-0. And then Solon, 33, Williamsburg 14. What did we make of that?
I think Solon's really good,
and yeah.
We're gonna we'll hear a little bit, find out a little bit more here in 2 days when they play Mount Vernon. I think both those teams are really good. I don't think any outcome either way would really surprise me, but I hope the weather's good for that, because both teams have such good passing games.
We could be arena like, right? 98, 97 or something?
Probably.
Maybe.
Why don't we look at the rankings? We put together our rankings, I guess, this week. We have a new number one, obviously, in 5A now with the suburban behemoths kind of beating each other, and that's Waukee Northwest. Knocks off West Des Moines Valley, which beat West Des Moines Dowling last week. So, and then we've got what, Liberty at two, correct? And yep. I'm trying to pull them up here. Sorry.
Again. Valley, Dowling, and Ankeny are 3 through 5. Okay. Prairie's at 6, and Iowa City West is at 10.
Yeah, and we didn't really talk much about Iowa City West, which had another dominant win last Friday night. And, you know, that's a team that's interesting to me. I think we talked a little bit about them last week, right, because they've got a couple of Division I players, guys going to Iowa. They've got a big offensive line that, you know, can be pretty dominant up front. So, you know, I guess we still have, need to wait and see maybe a little bit and see if West can be another one of those contenders on Eastern Iowa, do you think?
Yeah, they go to the Quad Cities each in the next 2 weeks. They're at PV this week and at Bettendorf next week. So a couple pivotal games there, and then they host Liberty in week 5. You know, if they can get through those three with 2 wins, get out of there 4-1, then they got Muscatine and Central. They're going to be heavily favored in those. Prairie in week 8. They've got a pretty good chance to go 7-2 if they can survive these 3 weeks.
You know, I think in week 1, JJ, you covered the battle for the boot and talked about the rush attack and how that kind of led the way. This week against Hempstead, Reese Wheeler threw for over 200 yards and 4 touchdowns. Campbell Janis still rushed for 117, but Iowa City West showed that they still are able to throw the ball around a little bit. So defenses aren't going to be able to focus on this one thing. You know, if they're able to perform like that week in and week out.
Agreed. And Ethan Hennings is a really good wide receiver who could probably be, I think might be a D1 player too, on the outside at wide receiver. So if they can, you know, settle on the quarterback, they're kind of going with two right now. You know, we'll see how the Trojans progress, but that's another really good team. Lindy, again, I'm conking out here on my computer,
that's
so I'm
okay.
Going to have you take over with the rankings, if that's
all right. Yeah, 4A top 5 is Xavier, Pella, North Polk, Decorah, Fort Dodge. Xavier's got the toughie with Clear Creek. Pella goes to North Scott. North Polk plays ADM at home, and Decorah goes to Waller. So there are absolutely some opportunity for some movement there. Clear Creek Amanda's at 7. 3A, Mount Vernon, Helan, Clear Lake, Solon, and Wallard are 1 through 5. Again, Mount Vernon plays at Solon. So that, Helan goes to, which I think is a pretty good 5A team in Sioux City East. I know I've probably got them ranked a little bit higher than everybody else does, but I think they're pretty good. And so they play Helan in week 3, and that's a big game. Independence is at 8, and a team that I think has really made a pretty big early statement in 3A is Des Moines Christian with a couple pretty good, really good wins to start the season. 2A, Kemper, OABCIG, PCM, Cherokee, and Osage and Van Meter tied for 5th. Kemper and OABCIG have a 1-versus-2 battle probably coming up next week in week 4, so looking forward to that. Albernette, which coming off a big win over Mid Prairie last week. They're at 7. Mid Prairie's tied for 9th. And Albernette's got a really big game at Regina, kind of another hill to climb against a really good program in Regina. 1A, you know, Grundy Center, West Lyon, take your pick there. Who's number 1 or 2? We've got Grundy at 1. Regina's at 3, South Hardin 4, Pleasantville 5, Beckman's at 10. Class A, that, you know, the big shift there came last week with North Lynn's win. So the top 5 now are St. Ansgar, West Hancock, Woodbury Central, MMCRU, and ACGC. North Lynn's at 7, Mack Valley's at 9. And then 8-player, top 5, Garrigan 1, Woodbine 2, Glabrick-Rhinebeck 3, and a tie for 4. Fremont Mills in Iowa Valley. Two big games this week. Number two, Woodbine against co-number four, Fremont Mills. And then the other number four, Iowa Valley, goes to number seven, Montezuma. And then we've also got Edco at nine.
So that's that. As we mentioned, some big games. Do you think, let's randomly go through some of these. Can Alberdat play with Regina? What do you think?
If they can get Mr. Caves loose, Lakin Caves loose, I think they can hang. He ran for 314 last week?
Yeah.
that's a lot of yards. But, he's a speedy guy. Boy, if he gets loose, you're not going to catch him.
KJ, what do you think?
Actually, probably before the win over Mid Prairie, I would have said no. But I think that was a really definitive win. 42-37. If they can control things up front, I think that's where maybe Regina is most vulnerable. I think, if Regina's skill players and their linebackers can make plays, it's going to be really tough, really a huge challenge for Alvernet. But with Caves, you have a puncher's chance. And if you can win the battle up front, and I haven't seen them play, Lindy, you did. But if they're strong up front, they could have a chance. And I'll be down there at Regina on Friday night covering this week. So I'm looking forward to that.
The other biggie, I guess, one of the other biggies, then Lindy, you'll be at Xavier and Clear Creek, Amana. What do we think about that, boys?
I imagine Xavier's been looking forward to this one since the schedule came out. What do you think?
Yeah, right? After last season, yeah.
Yeah, Clear Creek knocked them off last year in a district game. And I think Xavier's going to be ready to play this time.
Bill, do you agree with that?
Yeah, but I also think this is going to be a pretty pretty good ball game. Mm-hmm. I certainly lean to the side for Xavier getting a win here. Maybe the more complete team. But I think Clear Creek's going to be able to move the ball a little bit. They put up some big points here in the first 2 weeks. Granted, it's a different caliber of opponent this week, but I think this is going to be a game that might not be decided till later on.
Do you guys think is Clear Creek Amana? Are they here to stay? Is this a program that's going to be, close to a Xavier or like a Western Dubuque or a North Scott? Is that kind of in their future, just, with Lance and, we've talked about resources. Obviously, Clear Creek's got that now, a growing district. Do you see this being sleeping giants, not the right word, maybe just giant, in 4A football?
Yes, absolutely. I think. Bilge?
So you touch on something. So you got to have a coach that's vested in the long term and somebody that knows how to run things from top to bottom. Lance Peterson certainly fills that role perfectly. You've got a growing school district, right? You're going to have plenty of bodies. You're going to have a lot of talent kind of coming through there. It's a growing community, but you need a feeder system. I don't know what that's like for Clear Creek Amana, but I'm assuming with Lance Peterson, those things are being put into place if they hadn't been already with, who was it, Gabe Baker before that and, a couple other coaches. But if that's in place with the resources, growing community, coach, boy, that's a team that, you can almost think they'll reload like a Xavier, like a North Scott, you know, or a Pella or something like that, year in and year out.
Couple other games of note. Williamsburg PCM is one that kind of intrigues me, boys. You know, we have PCM, obviously very, very highly ranked, and Williamsburg coming off a loss against a really, really good Solon team. So I guess that's one that kind of intrigues me a little bit.
Both are coming off losses.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Very much. That is exactly right. Prairie has its first home game, hosts Bettendorf. Dyersville, Beckman, Maquoketa Valley, I guess, would have had a little more luster had Maquoketa Valley won last week. And I guess we don't know the status of Mr. Wall at quarterback. So kind of yet to be seen on that one. Another opportunity for Eastern Iowa, I guess. Waukee comes to Kingston Stadium to place Kennedy this week. So we'll see how Kennedy rebounds. Also had some guys out, apparently, in talking to Coach White, that'll be back eligible to play. I think he said including a couple of starters this week. So that's one that'll be interesting. Marion hosts Davenport North, kind of going around the metro here as well. I'm trying to think. KJ, you've got a game Thursday night. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Yeah, Clinton, Cedar Rapids, Washington. You know, you mentioned – Washington kind of fell short a little bit in week two against North Scott. Started really, really high on that win against Jefferson, which I still think is a decent win because we saw the way Jefferson bounced back. And I have a feeling I don't think these two teams are really a close match. I still think Cedar Rapids, Washington is quite a bit better than Clinton. But you got to go out and prove it, and I think that team will be ready to go on Thursday after that loss to North Scott and get back at it. So I assume Washington will be ready to play and has a good shot to go 2-1 now.
Elsewhere, Iowa City High hosts Waukee Northwest. Again, Central Eastern Iowa, kind of a crossover, as well as this one, Cedar Rapids Jefferson plays at Indianola as well on Friday night. And Linmar and Liberty plays at Liberty. And I think that takes care of all the Metro and Iowa City schools that we're talking about. Any other games out there? It's kind of we've got – some biggies, no doubt about that. But after those, I don't know necessarily that even around the state that there's a lot of marquee type of games. Am I missing any, guys?
I think one from that has to do with one of our area teams. I think it's going to be really – I think Decorah Wallert.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah. Yep.
Sigourney Keota, Mid-Prairie. I know Sigourney Keota's kind of had a rough start, but – I think that's going to be a good game. Statewide, there's a couple in 4A. ADM and North Polk could be a good one, as well as Pella and North Scott, even though it'd be a little bit more attractive if North Scott was at full strength.
Game with a couple teams, really, you know, really good traditional teams that are both 0-2. You can call it the Urgency Bowl. Lewis Central plays Harlan. So
yeah, who'd have guessed Lewis Central would be 0-2, right?
Either one of them. One area game that I think we're probably overlooking a little bit is Iowa Valley Montezuma, eight player. Imagine there will be some points scored in that one.
that is a huge game. Thanks for bringing that one up, Jeff. And that's at Moraine. It's at Monty. Okay, yeah. Okay. So that's one on the eight-man side, certainly, that we're looking forward to seeing.
One other one that's not our area, but area adjacent.
Yeah.
Don Bosco and Janesville.
Oh, there you go.
On the eight-man side. Keep an eye out for that. That one could be a real interesting game there.
Just looking here, Grundy Center and Dyke New Hartford. There's a couple of rivals that could be interesting. And we all know the heck of a run that Grundy's on right now. So anything else hit you? guys, either individually or team-wise, that you want to bring up?
I'm going to go off the football beat for just a little bit. We got a few little news nuggets that I've posted and just wanted to throw them out there.
Yep.
We all know that Alburnett's going into the – or is in the River Valley Conference now. The school board at Lisbon has also approved applying for the same thing, to go into the River Valley Conference. They'd like to get into the South Division. So now that's up to the RVC, ADs, and superintendents and all that. So we should know more by mid to late fall whether Lisbon will be moving conferences here. And that move could be in time for next year. So I think they'd be a really good fit in that RVC South with Alburnett now, with the Tiptons and Durants and Wiltons and Reginas and those people. So I hope that works out because they're not getting a lot of competition right now in the Tri-Rivers East.
They've become one of the bigger schools in the Tri-Rivers without a doubt. So you're right, John. I think the perfect fit.
Yeah, they've got big middle school numbers, big elementary numbers, so that enrollment's going to continue to grow. Another thing, state softball, girls' union announced today that they have extended their deal with Fort Dodge through 2045, a 20-year extension.
Wow.
So, KJ's been up to state softball. Fort Dodge does it right. I think this is a great move for everybody. So
even that long.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine there's probably some possibilities, some loopholes that but Fort Dodge isn't going to slide with this. I mean, they take so much pride in state softball, and I think it's a good deal. One last thing, as far as I'm concerned, Rivalry Saturday, December 6th, we're moving it off of off Thanksgiving weekend this week, and it's going to be at the new gym in Anamosa. So I've heard a lot of good things about that new gym, and we've got some really, really good matchups for that. So that's also posted online.
And Pilcher, you got Cohen Cornell on a Thursday night last week, and, and the beat goes on. The beat goes on, Cole.
Boy, I tell you what, Cole looked really good. Spoiled Kurt Ritchie's debut game. Brady Kelly, he's a guy that's been kind of waiting in the wings, the backup for Clay Krause last year, and he went off. He had a heck of a game, kind of rolling. It was, I think it was like 63 to 6. Cole and Cornell, I mean, that's just that's been one-sided. I think 25 straight wins now. It's just been dominance. And, Cole, what they thought were question marks as far as their defense goes and their passing game, not so much the receivers. He's got really good targets, but who you're going to get the ball out to those guys, they answered all those questions in week one. Now they have a tougher test with Wisconsin River Falls this week. So we'll see how they improve from week one to week two before they come back home for Nebraska Wesleyan and their ARC and home opener in a week from now. And then Cornell, they'll start Midwest Conference play Saturday at Ash Park, Van Meter Family Field against the University of Chicago. So it'll be a little bit of a different opponent. There's quite a gap between the Midwest Conference and the ARC. And we'll see if Cornell can fare a little bit better and if they can grow between week one and week two under Coach Ritchie.
Cornell and University of Chicago, name two schools I couldn't get into academically.
They wouldn't even let me in the parking lot.
They're just out front going, no, drive on.
No,
drive
on. Keep going.
I understand that. All right, boys, at JT Linder for Twitter, at KJ Pilcher, at JEJE66. We told you where we're going to be Friday night. It's going to be hot, so everybody hydrate. 90 degrees, I think, on Friday. if I saw right. But yeah, week three, let's keep her going. We're going to start district play here in almost every class coming up, you know, very soon, if it has not already started. So for Jeff and KJ, this is Jeff. Thank you for joining us for another edition of the Prep Huddle Prep Football Podcast. And take it away, KJ.
Keep your head on the swivel.